The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
TheOldOrchard.com. He is in Toronto for game four of the Maple Leafs and Bruins tonight in a couple of hours. Pierre McGuire, how you doing?
I'm very well, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Crosby, 173 playoff points in 152 games. Mario, 172 playoff points in 107 games. Just to get it out there.
Yeah, listen, with all due respect to Sidney and what he's going through, it's a completely different NHL. Some parts of it are harder, some parts of it are easier. For instance, because of zero tolerance on obstruction, on slashing, on the red line coming out, it's a more open game. For a lot of the guys that had the skill level of a Sidney Crosby and the speed of the Sidney Crosby, in Mario's day with the red line in, it was a tong war every night. And it was especially in the playoffs. And matchups were unbelievably prevalent because you had more face-offs, because you had more offsides, you had more icings, and you had more two-line passes. And there was no penalty for putting the puck over the glass unless it was deemed intentional. So it was a completely different game. And I had the privilege of working with Mario, and I'll just tell you, and Sid knows, he's a great player. Everybody knows how great he is. To compare the two in terms of the generation, I don't think it's fair to either guy. Mario is Mario, and Sid is Sid.
Well, can you imagine if Mario and some of the other offensive greats had the room that today's players generally do have?
You know, I'll give you one that I think, if Guy Lafleur, I'm just going to keep it Montreal-centric. If Guy Lafleur was playing in a league that had no two-line pass, he'd be looking at 80 goals every year. I'm just telling you. And one of our favorites, you and I, Pocket Rocket Richard, in a league with no two-line pass?
Oh, he would have had like 90 assists.
Are you kidding
me? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He would have got over 100 points probably like 5 or 6 years in a row. And one other one, just because I want to keep it Montreal-centric, and I hope one of his friends is listening and tells him. Can you imagine Yvon Cornwallé in a league without the red line and zero tolerance and obstruction? Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck.
60 goals. Too bad we can't do that,
man.
Huh? Yeah, we can do that. We could.
You know what? Montreal would have a lot of parades. It'd be a fun summertime in Montreal. I'll tell you that.
Last night, San Jose joined Las Vegas. It's interesting that both teams would end up meeting in round two by sweeping their opponents. Your initial feeling on that matchup?
Well, the one thing is going to be the X factor will be, does Joe Thornton come back or not for San Jose? And I think that's going to be a really tough one for Joe, and it's going to be a real tough one for Peter DeBoer, because Joe's been skating with their team. And the reason why I say that, if Joe comes back, who comes out? Number one, you're breaking up a winning lineup. And number two, Joe plays the game at a different pace, with a different vision, and it's brilliant. He's a Hockey Hall of Famer. He will be in the Hall of Fame. But he plays it at a different pace and at a different level than a lot of players. And a lot of guys are playing checkers. Joe Thornton is playing chess. So it's a different game. It's just, so that'll be that's the X factor as far as I'm concerned looking at the series. The four-line depth of both teams is very good. Both goalies are excellent. The difference is one goalie's won cups. Marc-Andre Fleury, one goalie, has not won cups, even though he's been to the final in Martin Jones. I think it's a long series, a hard series. I'd say a little advantage to Vegas because they have home ice advantage.
Before we get to where you are, a lot of focus, as you know, Pierre, today on the Ducks and where they go with a first-round sweep with so many of their key players past the age of 30 and locked up long term with no movement contracts. What do you see developing there, if anything?
Well, it's going to be hard because of what you just said. Number one, I thought about this on the plane ride today from Philadelphia. It's the death of heavy hockey, if you ask me. I talked about this on Ottawa radio this morning. St. Louis never made the playoffs. They were the architects of heavy hockey. Los Angeles Kings got swept. Heavy hockey team. Anaheim Ducks got swept. Heavy hockey team. The one team that used to be heavy and transitioned out of it, San Jose. And you see where they are. The Bruins used to be heavy. They transitioned out of it. Look where they are. So I don't know how they're going to do this because of the no movements that you're alluding to. But if there's one management group that I can tell you is far more progressive and gets no attention at all, it's in Anaheim. Bob Murray and David McNabb are really, really good at this. And so if there's one group that I think can figure this out, it will be them. And the other thing that they have that a lot of teams don't have, unbelievable depth and mobility on the back end. That's why Shea Theodore is playing in Las Vegas. They couldn't protect all their guys. And you're just scratching the surface with Brandon Montour. You're scratching the surface with Hampus Lindholm. They didn't have Cam Fowler because of injury. They're going to be very good. They just have to figure out the forward position.
So the death of heavy hockey, I'm like that. It jives with what we're seeing on television and in the rinks. At the same time, it's almost like being energetic and being able to play 20 minutes while constantly under threat of forecheck, that's become more important than ever, right, Pierre? You've got to be able to make decisions under pressure because teams are relentless when it comes to the forecheck.
What a great way to look at it. So I was talking last night in our game. Chad Ruedel is a player out of UMass Lowell, never drafted, signed by the Buffalo Sabres, a kid from San Diego, California. And he is a very important player for the Pittsburgh Penguins because of what Rod just spoke of. You know, Pittsburgh loses Ron Hainsey, who's done a great job in Toronto. He was on the shutdown tandem last year with Brian Dumoulin. They lose Trevor Daley, one of those mobile defensemen that Rod's alluding to. And look at, they put Ruedel in. He handles it really well. They up Justin Schultz's minutes. He's handled it really well. And Dumoulin and Letang now are the shutdown tandem. Yeah, so yeah, those guys, there's a premium on those guys, absolutely. Why did Toronto beat Boston the other night? Because Morgan Rielly, a big part of that game was Morgan Rielly in the stretch passes and him breaking down the Bruins' forecheck when he was on the ice. He played his best game of the series. He's one of those guys Rod's talking about.
You know, can they repeat or even be better than they were in Game 3? I think it'll be a bigger challenge. You know, take a look at Bergeron and Marchand and Pasternak, and they know the way the game went. They know they were minus plays. They know Marleau had a pair of goals against them. But their attitude, fellas, is bring it, bring it. Let's do it again. Let's try this again here in Game 4 because we're going to be better.
Andy Brickley of Nesson with Knuckles Nylund and Sean Campbell on Off the Cuff a few hours ago on TSN 690. Pierre, it's hard to imagine the Bergeron line not playing a whole lot or not actually bearing their chances as opposed to what happened the other night.
Well, you're the first person I heard that actually called it correctly. Not burying their chances. Everybody said, oh, they were terrible. No, they weren't. They were really good, actually. They just didn't finish their chances. So you're bang on with that, Mitch. I agree with Andy Brickley 100%, knowing all three of those guys extremely well. They love a challenge, and Andy said it really well. Bring it. That's what they will do tonight. They will bring it. The one piece of good news for the Bruins is that Matt Grizzlick's back in the lineup. And that's not a knock on Nick Holden, who had a really good assist in game number 3. But his minutes were limited, and he's not nearly as good a puck mover or a skater as Matt Grizzlick is. Now, Grizzlick probably won't be 100%, but they need his legs. He's, again, one of those defensemen that Rod's talking about, and I've been telling you about him for 2 years. He's that good a player. He really is. He's a very, very important player for this team. He can play in the 4-hole. He can play in the 6-hole. It doesn't matter. He's never going to waver in terms of the way he plays, and he can play on the second power play with McAvoy, which he does a lot.
In addition to hoping that Plekanec can do his job again and his line mates can find the net perhaps, what does Toronto have to do tonight?
Well, the same thing they did in the second period. The second period really swung this game. Mike Babcock coached as well as he had in the entire series. They utilized a stretch pass. I think Boston will try to defend that a little bit differently. In the second period, it was a huge part of why the Maple Leafs had success in the second period. They were able to keep Austin Matthews away from McAvoy and Chara. The one piece of bad news for the Leafs, Chara and McAvoy didn't get stressed out minutes-wise, and they've had an extra day here. So it's not like a typical playoff series where it's every other day. So that extra day will help an older player like Chara and will help settle down a younger player like McAvoy, because you're in the team environment, you're still up 2-1 in the series. He's a hockey passionate kid, so everybody here is talking about hockey. So they'll feel better coming to the rink. They'll be motivated. So for Toronto, the biggest thing, You got to win the game, but you really got to win the second period. That's where that plays to their strengths in terms of utilizing home ice and an advantage.
Yeah, and in the last game, Pierre, I think we saw, you know, specifically Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner really being the catalyst to using that stretch pass that you're talking about. I was listening to Mike Babcock from earlier today at the morning skate, and he was talking about the longer a series goes, how every single game it seems like there's less room. And he saw pretty much no room available in game number three. Doesn't that really work against the Leafs when you look at the head-to-head matchup with the two teams?
Yeah, it does, but, you know, every series takes on a life of its own. It depends on the flow of the game. Mike's right, in a traditional series, I don't know if this is going to be that traditional a series, because you got game breakers on both sides. You've got guys that can really open it up. I mean, we haven't even talked about David Krejci. David Krejci can break a game open. David Pastrnak's already proven with 6 points in one game, he can break a game open. Marchand's a game breaker. On the other side, Austin Matthews is a game breaker. Mitch Marner is a game breaker. They've got game breakers on their side, too. The one thing, if Toronto can get out of here 2-2, the one thing that really helps them, getting Kadri back for Game 5 in Boston, that helps them a ton. That changes the dynamic in terms of matchups, and it gives them a little bit more physical impetus and a little bit more scoring impetus going into a really tough environment in Boston. If they don't get out of this thing 2-2 then tonight, then I think it's going to be a real tough ask for Toronto.
Yeah, and I mentioned this earlier. It's difficult. It's not impossible. It's difficult to imagine them winning two of the three games that Kadri would have been suspended for, considering how important he is to that team. How does the what's happened to Toronto's penalty kill?
A lot, but they're going up against one of the top power plays in the league with Boston. You know, depending on the night during the season, Boston was either 1, 2, or 3. You know, I mean, you're talking about an elite power play. Marchand's great on it. Pastrnak's great on it. Bergeron's one of the best players I've seen in terms of playing the high slot position or the bumper position, which they call it in Boston. And, you know, obviously in the back end, they've got major weapons. Torrey Krug had a career year. So their power play's got so many dynamic weapons to it. It's tough. But the other night, I thought their penalty killing was good when it had to be. They didn't have to be very good the other night, totally, because they didn't have a lot against them. But it's, you know, again, you're going up against a really good power play. That's part of the problem.
Totally agree. And I'm just wondering, though, we're talking about the new model and how defenses should be built. Do you think, Pierre, that Mike Babcock relies on Roman Polak a little bit too much in those specific situations?
He still likes that kind of presence to clear the crease, and I don't think there's a problem with that, because at some point your skill guys, especially the smaller ones, they'll get worn out. You still got to have some jumbos. There's no question you got to have some stampeding elephants, I like to call them, and Roman Polak's one of those. They're really important guys to have, a shot blocker. Listen, Boston has their guy, Adam McQuaid. You know, they have their same guy on the other side, and his number one priority is shot blocking and killing penalties. That, he scored the other night, which is a bonus, but they're not counting on him for points. So every team, I think, in the league needs that. But I understand your point. Is Mitch Gallis just a little bit too much ice time probably for Polak?
So you mentioned the term game breaker a moment ago, Pierre. How about Kucherov and what he did to the Devils last night?
Shocking. Well, first of all, his athletic play was phenomenal. His hit on Sammy Vatanen wasn't phenomenal. I'm really surprised after what happened with Drew Doughty that there's no suspension there. Listen, I don't care who wins or loses in any game or in any series, but I'm just telling you, I'm calling it the way it is. I'm surprised there wasn't a suspension on that play. But Kucherov's athletic performance, off the charts. Off the freaking charts.
Well,
John, that goal that he scored in the slot, the spinning roof job on the shot there, that's you can't teach that at hockey school, sorry.
Yo, well, John Cooper said he flexed his muscles tonight, and I'm sure part of that description was the hit on Vatanen, who obviously didn't return to the game. He's their best defenseman. He played a total of 6 minutes. Why do you think, like, if you're splitting hairs at the player safety department and Drew Doughty got a game, what do you think they were looking at?
I couldn't tell you. And you know what's amazing? I watched all of Nashville and Colorado last night to see if my prediction to you would hold true. And Ryan Hartman's getting one game for some of his shenanigans for his hit on Soderberg. But how come nobody in the league player safety talks about what happened with him and Andrew Gettle earlier in the game? I mean, all this stuff happens for a reason. You know, guys just don't lose it. They don't just flip the switch because they're crazy. There's a reason why they get a little crazy. And I don't know what's, again, it's hard to predict. That's why I don't like to give you numbers of suspensions or even try to predict the suspension game, is because it's almost impossible to do. It really is.
For those who aren't aware of what Pierre was talking about, Andrew Ghetto, who skated a lot but typically couldn't finish, he speared Ryan Hartman underneath the cup, basically.
Yes.
But that doesn't have anything to do with what Hartman did to Soderberg, because that was just straight headshot.
No, but that's what gets guys to lose their mind.
Yeah.
If you looked at what happened after he got speared, he went right after Andrew Ghetto, and they called him for holding the stick. Meanwhile, Andrew Ghetto put his stick right in his crotch area again.
Right.
You know, so.
All right.
And if it's not for the linesman being proactive there, I don't even know if the referee would make a call on that play, because look where Andrew Ghetto was. He was sitting on the bench before they had to go get him to put him in the penalty box.
The other game tonight starts 30 minutes after Pierre's game in Toronto. Washington and Columbus, the Capitals try to even things up. What would you expect there?
Well, just like Boston didn't have a lot of hockey luck in Game 3, I didn't think Columbus had a lot of hockey luck in Game 3 in their game. Washington showed me a lot. Holtby showed me a ton. I saw a Washington team that really passionately cared about one another. So I think that's going to make it a really hard game tonight. I would expect Columbus, just like I thought Nashville would play their best game in the series last night, and they did, I would expect Columbus will break the egg and there will be no overtime tonight. I expect that Columbus will play their best game of the series tonight, and we'll see how that plays out.
Maple Leafs try to even up their series with the Bruins. Boston tries to take a 3-1 series lead. Face off a little more than 90 minutes from now. That's where Pierre is. Thanks as always. We'll talk again tomorrow, Pierre.
I'll be in Pittsburgh tomorrow. I look forward to that, Mitch. Thanks a lot. Have a great night, everybody.
This one ends up with another whitewash for goaltender Matt Murray as it ends. Murray's second of this playoff year, sixth in his NHL career in playoff competition, and the Penguins will take a series lead of 3-1.
Up next, following Mitch Gallo's update, agent provocateur Alan Walsh in Los Angeles.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by...